him a little test. I wrote down the wrong name but the right phone number, and this was a test. If it had been an actual alert, he did well. He actually has the right person on the line. I couldn't lead him astray. 42 degrees in Kalamazoo. On and off showers. This is not my kind of weather. I would much rather get to snow than this, even though it's 42 degrees out. 42 degrees if the sun is out is really a nice day. 42 degrees and drizzle, not so much. That's not what I've got in mind. Got a busy afternoon coming up. We're going to talk with Jennifer Johnson here any moment. And this is Giving Tuesday, and Jennifer is pitch hitting for Ann Lipsey, who has the crud that's going through our community and has no voice. We started out, we were going to talk with Ann, and but Jennifer Johnson, a great lady, we'll talk to her about Giving Tuesday and loaves and fishes. Coming up at 3:45, I know we just talked to her yesterday, but Amy Harden is joining us again this afternoon, this time to talk about the Detroit bankruptcy. And I like her take on things, and so we'll chat with her at 3:45 to learn more about this bankruptcy in Detroit. Speaking of Detroit, at 4:10, Jeff Gilbert from WWJ and CBS News is going to join us to talk about auto sales and how the big three are doing and the implications for Michigan's economy. And then at 4:40, we're trying to hook up with Mark Phelan. If the auto sales are doing well, and I think that's what we'll hear from Jeff, then which cars are people buying? And that's where Mark Phelan, the auto critic for the Detroit Free Press, comes in. And all that going on right here at 590 WKZO. Joining me now, Jennifer Johnson. Do you work in a mask these days, Jennifer?
Yes, exactly.
And wearing rubber gloves.
Right.
And, yeah,
we have to creep around her. Right.
I called Ann this morning, and I could hardly recognize her voice.
I know.
And apparently it went south from there.
It did. But, yep, it's gone now.
Oh, okay. She's still there, I'll bet.
Just left, but yes. Trying to get better. So.
Yeah, I know. She never should have been there, but I understand the commitment that she makes. Well, talk to me a little about Giving Tuesday. You know, we've come up with these new days. We started with just Black Friday, that's now become Black Thanksgiving, I guess. Then we had Small Business Saturday. We have Cyber Monday. And now we are starting a new tradition, Giving Tuesday.
Right. They actually started it last year. It was,
oh, really?
It was pretty small. Yeah. And Giving November, Giving December is more accurate for us because we needed more than one day. But last year charities got together sort of in response to those big shopping days and said, let's do something that makes people stop for a second, give them an opportunity to take a minute and think about others that are in the community that probably need your help in some capacity, whether it's food, which is what we do, or housing, or some other resource that they are just cannot come up with themselves.
Right, right. And have you seen people stepping up? Part of what is involved in my question is we have eliminated some of the tax deductions for charitable giving. And has that had a negative impact is really what I'm getting to.
Right. It's the second year that we've had that elimination. And honestly, for us, we are incredibly lucky. We are an organization that has had the support of this tremendous community for 31 years. And we continue to see that commitment, that consistent giving, whether it's in terms of food donations, whether it's funds or volunteer time. So we're very, very lucky that that still comes in the door for us.
Mm-hmm.
This year was tough. There were some very, very tough months. The summer months are very difficult for us, for instance, in terms of those donations. But things always pick up for us during this time period, and we are seeing that happen now. So we're real happy to see people responding in the community, coming out, trying to do what they can to help us.
How have the cuts to the SNAP program impacted? Are you feeling the increase in business because of that?
I believe we have. It's been a couple months now. You know, the stimulus, the ARRA stimulus cuts ended November 1st, and then people had already been starting to lose their benefits or lose some of their SNAP dollars. And food dollars, and then the looming food and farm bill that's coming up, which is some ridiculous $40 billion amount that they're wanting to cut from that program, would devastate people who are living with the least. You know, so we all lived through this recession of the last few years, but during that time period, many of us were able to recover, you know, and we're recovering now. But those who were hit the hardest will take the longest to recover, and some are not going to recover. And so they need desperately any of those dollars. So taking $36 away from you during the month is significant. It really makes a difference.
Jennifer, how close are you to what's going on in Congress with the SNAP benefit? They only have six more working days before they adjourn for the year. Are you expecting any movement on the SNAP program during that 6 days our part-time Congress works?
I doubt it. I really do doubt it. We've expected movement for a long time, and it keeps getting sort of stalled or paused for a number of different reasons, sequestration or whatever, over the last year. And so, no, we don't expect movement in the next 6 days. We're looking now into 2014 for those cuts to be revealed and for us to find out. We stay close to the Food Bank Council of Michigan, who keeps kind of their finger on the pulse of what's going on at the state level and the national level.
Yeah.
And we try to stay in tune as much as we can. We do have an advocacy wing of what we do, and just keeping our ear to the ground and listening to the people that we're trying to serve.
So at this point, no news is sort of good news.
Yeah.
you're still waiting for the shoe to drop, but the shoe hasn't dropped. Yeah,
it's begun to drop for many people, but the big drop has not occurred yet. And so we're anticipating that. We know the demand is, we're projecting demand will be up this next year. You know, this last year we served 126,000 people. Just today we served 666 people. So we're doing our work every single day, that we're going to get up tomorrow and do it again. And we continue to just thank this wonderful community for keeping us going.
Yeah. We're talking with Jennifer Johnson. She's with Loaves and Fishes, and one of the major components of the safety net we have for people in our area who find themselves food insecure, and doing a good job. You said from now till the end of the year is a strong period for donations for you folks.
That's true. It's often a time where, you know, people, like I said, take a second and think of others, and we've been very lucky. End of year giving is something that is very strong for us generally, and we are already seeing an influx of donations from local folks, and are so grateful for people who are able to give. I know that not everybody is able to give, and that's what Giving Tuesday is about too. It isn't necessarily those who have the most, But if you do have a few dollars and want to do something, you can still do that. You know, a dollar makes a difference here. A dollar feeds a person here at Kalamazoo Loaves and Fishes three meals for a day. Mm-hmm. So that's powerful. We can do a lot with your dollar. So we look forward to that, and we continue to, you know, in every way, take those donations.
My wife and I make a monthly contribution. Are we able to do that only because my wife's employer allows that? Or are there other mechanisms that people could do to make automatic monthly contributions?
Absolutely. Yes, you can do monthly contributions through our online donation form. So if you go to www.kzoolf.org, there's a donate button right on the front page, and just click that button and it will give you some options down below. It allows you to set up an automatic withdrawal. So you can also do that through your bank if you'd like to. So it comes out on a monthly basis. We also have people who choose to do it that way. So,
and there are employers who allow you to do that too. Is that correct?
That's true.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Why don't you give that website one more time, Jennifer?
You bet. It's www.kzool, as in loaves, F as in fishes.org.
I appreciate your taking time to talk with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
When you see Ann, tell her to get well. We need her strong and fighting. There's people who need her out there.
Absolutely. I'll give her your best.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer.
You.
Have a good one.
Thanks.
Jennifer Johnson from Loaves and Fishes, an important part of the safety net in Kalamazoo County. For people who are not as well off as you are. 42 degrees, Michael and Roger riding home with you this afternoon. We'll give you a full rundown on the weather, and the warmth ain't gonna last for long right after this. At 590 WKZO, Roger and Michael. Weather brought to you by Bronson Vicksburg Outpatient Center, offering emergency care and lab work 24/7. Learn more at bronsonhealth.com. And you heard that the weather is turning colder Thursday. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk with AccuWeather meteorologist Bob Larson, and we'll find out if it's going to get numbingly cold. And methinks there's a chance that's in the offing. We'll find out when we talk to him. Then we'll talk with Amy Harden. She'll give us some additional perspective on the Detroit bankruptcy and just how people who are living on pensions and facing getting 16 cents for every dollar of pension, how are they going to live on that? And then at 4:10, on a brighter note, Jeff Gilbert joins us from Detroit, but the big three seem to be doing better. And what does that mean for Michigan's economy? And then we're hoping to connect with Mark Phelan in the latter part of the 4 o'clock hour. And we're going to talk to Mark about what product is actually moving within the car companies to create what's going on. All that coming up as the afternoon moves on. You get a little closer to home. Was reading the overview of the Pew Research poll that says growing numbers of Americans believe U.S. global power and prestige is in decline, and support for U.S. global engagement, already at a historic low, has fallen even further. And it seems the nation thinks we're looking at the rest of the world and helping them with problems more than taking care of our business right here at home. And all you got to do is drive down our country's roads, and you can see how we're not taking care of things very well. And some of the things we're not taking care of very well aren't visible. Sewer lines, water lines, power lines, putting them underground where they're safer from storm damage, that sort of thing. You can see where this country has neglected its infrastructure for quite some time. And some politicians, it seems especially those on the conservative side of the spectrum, don't see letting the infrastructure deteriorate as deficit spending. And it really is. Conservatives all excited that the size of the deficit is going down. And I share that. That's certainly a good thing. But some of that deficit, if it's investing in these things which make our country work, are investments. They're not spending. It's not like the motorcycle commercial where you see the guy driving down Mulholland Drive with dollars just flowing off of him. That's not the way that that it works. And I'm thinking the American people are beginning to realize that wars that we were tricked into fighting and spending trillions of dollars on has not only diminished our prestige in the world, but it's also kept us from taking care of our country and making sure you can get from point A to point B without having to pay for repairs on your car. Companies should be able to move goods from point A to point B without hassle. We need to keep our economy moving, so to speak. And there's a lot of information in this poll, but it seems the major thing I took away from it is that the American people are getting pretty tired of sending our money and our troops all over the world and yet not seeing much in taking care of our country. Coming up on a CBS News update, 42 degrees, Bob Larson follows. This is Michael's weather. He likes 40-degree, cloudy, drizzly days. He shared this with me, the explanation I'm not so certain of, but this is his kind of weather. McKinney likes rain, but he likes a lot more wind. Michael is really into sort of foggy, depressing weather. I don't know what this says about a person's personality, but I worry just a little, just a skosh. I'm kidding, Michael.
I know.
Yeah, I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, I like sunny, like warm days, like 60, 70-ish, you know, good running weather.
I don't even need it warm. Yesterday was just fine with
me. Yeah, you were fine with yesterday.
40 degrees and the sun out. It is, well, first, I have bad sinuses and this kind of weather. We're sort of above my temperature now. We're up into, well, almost the middle 40s. It's really when we have a lot of humidity and weather in the 30s. That my sinuses just turn into concrete and the pounding on the head begins. We're going to talk to Bob Larson here straight away and find out how long this drizzle is going to continue and when the colder temperatures he's promised get here. Weather is brought to you by West Michigan Office Interiors on Southwest Ridge. Check out their winter clearance sale going on right now. I was kidding Michael that this is his kind of weather, Bob. He likes a drizzle and sort of foggy and 43 degrees.
And not unlike Jim, who likes it rainy and windy.
Yes. I was just saying the same thing. What's wrong with these people? How long is this going to go? This is my least favorite weather period.
Variety is the spice of life, Roger.
Thank you, my man.
How long is it going to last? Well, that would lead to my word.
And it is?
Transitory.
I wanted to hear that word.
In other words... It won't last all that long.
Oh, good. I wondered what that meant.
But. Yes, we are going to find the drizzly, foggy, damp weather continuing. It won't end perhaps as soon as you may want it to. It's not going to wait tonight as we'll hang on to the dampness and some fog, a little drizzle, a couple of showers. Mild for a night in December as temperatures will hold steady at or above 40. Might even rise a few notches overnight. The point is, will stay way above freezing, so there's no need to worry about any of this freezing up tonight. And as we've been saying, tomorrow, Wednesday, we pinpoint as the warmest day of the week as we shoot for the 50-plus category, projecting 54 for a high, despite the fact that it'll be cloudy. A breeze will kick in. That should take care of some of this fog, but still mostly cloudy. But not much rain, just a stray shower and a couple of showers scattered about tomorrow evening. Then it begins to turn colder. It's not going to be a shock to the system where it gets cold all at once. We start to see the cold weather return in a gradual state. Late tomorrow night, we drop to 35, so still above freezing, but colder than tonight. And then not much of a climb in temperature Thursday. Cloudy upper 30s for a high 39, and then Friday's colder than Thursday, and Saturday's colder than Friday, and so on and so forth.
Is that high on Thursday going to come relatively early in the day?
I actually think that the true high for the calendar day of Thursday is probably in the 40s, being at 12:05 a.m., in other words, just after midnight tomorrow night. The 39 might be realistic. We get to 35 by daybreak Thursday. It might rise a few notches to 39 by midday or so, and then falls off again Thursday night.
Okay.
And then Friday's high is below freezing, maybe below 30.
Ooh.
And in the Thursday night, Friday time frame, there will be some bands of lake effect snow. I don't think so much in the immediate Kalamazoo area, but certainly over the greater region to our west especially, southwest. And then once the cold air moves in, you know what? It sticks around right through the weekend and the better part of next week with a reinforcing blast of cold coming in next week, perhaps accompanied by some snow along about Sunday night and Monday. Way too early to say how much, but I think there could be some more snow. Very confident of the fact that it stays cold.
Is that second batch of snow, is that actually new precipitation or is that lake effect?
That would be a new precipitation from a storm, a new storm.
Okay.
But right now it's a storm that looks like it tracks to our south, and it might be much more of a snow threat from, say, well, I don't know, St. Louis to Cleveland, along that path rather than here.
Okay.
But probably would be some little lake effect behind it, because the shot of air that comes in behind that, I think it's colder than what's even coming in at the end of this week.
Mm. Well, we got to expect that, Bob.
We do.
Yeah, yeah. What do the longer trends portend?
A relaxation of the cold maybe the following week. That would take us to the third week of December. And a little too early to say about the end of December into January. I think overall it's a relaxation of the pattern. It doesn't mean warm necessarily, but less harsh for the second half of December and early January, only to see it flip back to colder again later in January and February. We've been keying all along that the second half of the winter might be worse than the first half.
So I'm hearing in there no guarantee of a white Christmas.
No, there's not, but particularly considering what might be coming up the third and fourth week of December, I think there's ample opportunity for snow here in the next 10 days.
Okay.
But whether or not that holds right through Christmas, tough to say. If we get a few mild days in there, we might lose a lot of whatever snow cover we started to build up.
Yeah, we got a little bit last night, maybe an inch where I live, maybe less than an inch. I didn't go out and measure, but not a lot of snow, just a skosh. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Good one, and we'll talk to you again same time tomorrow.
Okay, Roger. Take care.
Have a good one. AccuWeather meteorologist extraordinaire Bob Larson. And, okay, so if you don't like today's weather, wait a minute. 590 WKZO time is 3:46. Roger, Michael, and Amy Harden. Amy, how you doing this afternoon?
I am just fine, and you?
Good. This is getting to be a regular thing. I wouldn't bother you again, except today's news is so important to our state. I thought we needed to hear your perspective. My big concern in this is I heard the term 16 cents on a dollar bantied about. And is that what people who are dependent on pensions from the city of Detroit should be thinking about?
I'm not ready to go there yet. I know that the emergency manager had been using that, but you know he was also building up to the bankruptcy filing in July. Now the bankruptcy judge Stephen Rhodes today he actually not in his written statement, but you know speaking to the court, he was referring to the Michigan's constitutional prohibition from impairing pensions. Meaning that it's illegal to touch that money, but he said that the federal court can bypass that and that he has that authority. But then he went on to say that he doesn't necessarily mean he would approve a plan that cuts them. However, unions are understandably very, very nervous. I just saw 8 minutes ago the AFL-CIO put out a statement. I have not read the entire statement yet. I imagine it's as strongly worded as the first line. Or the line that they pulled from it to highlight, make no mistake about it, this ruling sends a clear signal that if you work hard and earn a fair pension, a governor with a radical right-wing political agenda can use the federal bankruptcy court as a tool to rob you of everything you earned. I think that's the way a lot of pensioners are feeling, in addition to the 9,700 people that are still employed by the city of Detroit. This is a very sad day, and it's of a great deal of concern to everyone in Michigan. It's a shame that a lot of outstate people don't understand how the ripple effects of this. You know, Detroit really is our city is our core. It should be the crown jewel, and unfortunately we have not been treating Detroit that way for many years.
Is there any talk at the state level about looking at this pension problem? Is Governor Snyder aware that there's this going on out there?
Oh, yes, the governor is fully aware of the situation. And my feeling is that he is, because the emergency manager does that, that apparatus just simply was not going to work in Detroit to begin with. And you know I object to the concept of emergency managers to begin with.
Yeah.
But I think that the governor, what he's looking at now is let's let the bankruptcy mechanism do its thing. Now, as to, you know, how much guidance behind the scenes the governor is giving. I'm not entirely sure of that. He's not going to, you know, tip his hand on that, how he feels about it. But hopefully he understands that when you're dealing with, it's well over 20,000 people. I've seen two different figures, 21,000 and 23,000 pensioners. And most of them are still living in the Detroit area, and they're drawing on average less than $20,000 each. That's a lot of people to impoverish. And, you know, our poverty rate here in Michigan, and particularly in the urban areas, you know, down in Wayne County, it's pretty high to begin with. So that would be messing with the economy in a pretty serious way.
Yeah. Slightly changing the subject, Bill Schuette, the Attorney General, has been stating, my interpretation is unequivocatingly saying that the DIA art is off limits. Is what happened today going to have any impact on the Detroit Institute of Arts?
It's going to fire up the litigation, I'm sure. We've known this is coming. What happened today was absolutely no surprise to anyone. Anyone that is surprised, that would shock me. Will definitely be at play because, and we discussed this the other day, that there are a lot of people that are interested in the DIA art for its cultural value, and those are some of the wealthier communities that surround Detroit that are invested in that particular cultural gem there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the unions have hopped on board saying, you know, they basically want to, you know, pilfer the DIA, and they are doing what they, you know, should be doing along with the other creditors, you know, like them or not, the bondholders. They're doing what they should be doing is trying to protect their own interests. So we've got a whole lot of different parties here. I believe there's something like 100 different creditors out there that are going to be squabbling over this. It kind of reminds me of a really, really ugly pinata fight, or perhaps, the Walmart doorbusters where people were taking out tasers and knives.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking of turkey vultures on some fresh carrion. That's what comes to mind for me. We all have our mental images of this bankruptcy process. Let's take a second to try to look into the future. Detroit still has been unable, one of Kevin with the Y's failures has been really straightening out the budget. Isn't there like a $200 million budget deficit in 2014? And what does taking a city into bankruptcy do to that?
Yes, the projected negative cash flow is just under $200 million, $198.5 million. I suspect that because it's such a big problem with so many moving parts, that it's nearly impossible for any one of these people, no matter how skilled they are in their field, to be able to get a grasp of what is going to happen, you know, even several days down the road at this point, because there's just too many factors that could affect it.
Mm-hmm.
My concern personally is that I think the first thing they should be looking at is making sure the city keeps on running and that it's safe. Safety's just, I mean, they've had a high crime rate there for decades. They're always in the top, you know, one or two cities in the United States. Their homicide rates, only 8.7% of their violent crime is ever solved. There's 58-minute response time for 911 calls. 40% of the streetlights don't work. And I gathered some figures together today. That's 370 functioning streetlights per square mile.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland has 812 functioning, St. Louis 785. So that's down about half. And when your streetlights go out, crime goes up. Everyone knows that. And 78,000 abandoned structures in the city. The population has been going down too, obviously, you know, from the great arsenal of democracy back in the 1950s. The city's lost 63% of its population. It's down to just under 700,000 people,
mm-hmm.
with an unemployment rate of 18.3% compared to 9% at the state level. Their revenues
Say
are
that
down.
Again.
Oh, their unemployment rate is currently 18.3%, and the state level has held steady at 9%.
Twice the state level, and the state level is way too high. I don't like the numbers, but thank you for sharing it with us anyway. Over 18% unemployment. How does that work? How do you run a community with unemployment that high?
I honestly don't know. And one of the other concerns is among the $18 billion in debt that Detroit has, $5.7 billion of that is in unfunded health care for pensioners and for employees. And one of the ways that the emergency manager and everyone has been saying is if we can get the Affordable Care Act, the expanded Medicaid, up and running in Michigan, as opposed to being delayed the way that the legislature has done that, that can help take up a lot of the slack because, like I said, these pensioners, these are households that are bringing in less than $20,000. So they're already living below the poverty level and probably would easily qualify for Medicaid under the expansion.
I appreciate your taking time to talk with us 2 days in a row, Amy.
My pleasure.
Amy Harden is the author of Democracy Tree, and if others like me find your take on these issues intriguing, how do they find you?
At democracy-tree.com, the dash being a hyphen, of course, and from my website, they can find me on Facebook and Twitter.
Thank you, ma'am. You have yourself a delightful afternoon.
And same to you, Roger. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. Amy Harden, author of Democracy Tree. And, boy, this Detroit thing just gets uglier and uglier. On and off, drizzle and showers.
Trifecta continues after CBS News and Kalamazoo's news from the WKZO.com newsroom on 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.